Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston accent.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Oh!
Down goes Duffy on call. Frank Mir does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, well, happy Easter if that applies. Sunday, April 17th, 2022 is the year. It's episode 345 of the Anik and Florian podcast. Haters gonna hate Ken Flo. That's okay. We all got him. Bilal, remember the name Muhammad representing the channel memorably this weekend. Some would argue that's the wrong adverb, but it's good to see you, Ken Flo. A lot to get to in the main event. And, you know, Bilal Muhammad, unranked when we started Remember the Show here in 2020. Look at him now.
Yeah, very impressive. First of all, I've never had a hater in my life, so I don't know what you're talking about.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. No, listen, you're going to have haters no matter what. But, you know, for Bilal, I was just, again, this is why I picked him. I think there were some interesting moments where maybe I was a little concerned, especially with that left hook that he was kind of running into a little bit at times. But largely, this was another very smart performance from Bilal Muhammad, who continues to do his homework and execute beautiful game plans. The way that he puts it all together is always a pleasure to watch. And, you know, I think he's a study in that you don't have to be perfect at everything. It's how you combine everything that makes the difference. And, you know, he's not the best wrestler. He's not the best striker. He's not the best submission artist, but his ability to do things at the right time and to have the right approach against various opponents. Now, this isn't just a guy that knows how to fight one style. He knows how to beat you in a variety of ways. And again, it's his intelligence that stands out to me after this performance.
It's a great point. I was talking to my twin brother this morning, and he keeps harkening back to something that Khabib Nurmagomedov said, and that's that Khabib himself is smarter than he is tough. He would say, you know, I'm smarter than I am tough. Not that I'm not tough, but obviously that's a big part of the success for Bilal Muhammad is the fight IQ, the ability to execute and adjust. You know, Dominic Cruz was very, you know, praiseworthy of Bilal for his execution and even seeing weapons, you know, even throwing a spinning back elbow at times because that particular opening might have been there. You know, I think Mike Valley deserves a lot of credit for how Bilal is game planning and executing. That left hook in round three, I mean, Luque obviously is a skilled fighter, and that was sort of the only major adversity for Bilal in the fight, right? That short left hand from Luque that wobbled him, he seemed to recover. But other than that, Bilal was able to take him down in four or five rounds, if I'm not mistaken. He was able to control him on the ground at least for 60 seconds or so thereafter, and, you know, easy fight to score and a rather dominant win, I would say, for, you know, number five versus number four.
Yeah, you know, his timing on his takedowns is just impeccable. You know, you don't have to be the best finisher or the best wrestler if you can set them up properly. You know, similar to a George St. Pierre, his timing was just better than everybody. So he was so deep on your legs that he was going to finish those takedowns. And Bilal, in a little, you know, different fashion, was able to set up those takedowns extremely well, largely from his lateral movement. And he sets some beautiful baits and traps to get those takedowns.
Yeah.
And also off of his lateral movement, he was landing shots as well. And for Luque, you know, it doesn't make it, you know, an easy fight by any means, but there's very clear patterns to how Vicente Luque was fighting. And I think Bilal was onto it very early. And, you know, I think there were certain times where Bilal looked a little uncomfortable. I think being in a 5-round fight, maybe yeah. with some pressure, I think he'll adjust eventually to that. But I think it was a great experience for Bilal, who is, you know, only going to get tougher fights from here on out.
He's on an airplane right now. Otherwise, he was scheduled to join us here during the opening segment, but it didn't align as far as our window is concerned. But you can be sure he's going to be heard from on this channel at the very least Thursday with Remember the Show. But yeah, I think you hit on a couple of truths there in terms of his, you know, physical exhaustion. When I saw the UFC social media and him walking back, I don't know that I've ever seen him so exhausted, Bilal Muhammad. So getting that 25-minute experience, I think, for him moving forward is absolutely enormous. But yeah, I thought there were some moments of uncomfortability on the feet a little bit, but I do believe that you're definitely seeing an evolution on the feet in Bilal in terms of his vision, creating angles, his strikes. He's just a much more layered striker, and his dogged pressure, I think, is going to be a problem for a lot of guys in this division. You know, people are asking me a lot on a Sunday morning about what the ceiling is for Bilal, and you know, get out of here with the gatekeeper term right now. You know, when you look at his signature wins and you look at how long this unbeaten streak has lasted for him, you know, I don't know if his ceiling is championship, right? I mean, I do believe that that there's work to be done to get on the level of a Covington or a Chimaev or a Burns or Kamaru Usman. But this is a huge step in the right direction. One thing I also want to bring up before I forget, Ken Flo, Gilbert Burns pulled Bilal Muhammad aside and he said the body kicks were the biggest factor, that Luque was affected by those body kicks. I don't know if you have anything on that.
I tell you what, when I was watching the fight, to me, they looked absolutely brutal. Those kicks to the liver and to the body were nasty. They were landing very, very heavy. And, you know, I was looking intently at Luque's face to see if there was any damage or if there was any...
Right.
He was not showing any of it. He was slowing down. But to me, I'm like, how the hell is this yeah. guy not getting dropped or at least backing up after eating these body kicks? Luque, you know, we knew he was tough, but it's absolutely confirmed. I definitely saw a little bit of a difference in Luque, the way he was moving. But yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, that's good to hear that Luque is somewhat
human. Yeah. And Luque's leg kicks obviously were a big factor in the fight. You know, I thought Vicente mm-hmm. fought well at times. You know, I'm not sure he had enough late to rally, and his corner thought it was 2-2. I thought most people did not think it was 2-2 going into that fifth round. But a huge win for Bilal Muhammad. You know, he takes the higher ranking. I believe it was 5 versus number 4, if I'm not mistaken. So mm-hmm. as we sort of spin it forward for Bilal, and we're going to talk to Ray Longo about this, so I'm not going to shortchange our guy. I threw out a poll question today. Who do you think will be next? Not who would you like to see next? You know, right. Who do you think is going to be next? I believe that's the way I phrased it. So you could say Gilbert Burns, Khamzat Chimaev, Colby Covington, or don't care / I'm a hater, you know, and sure as shit, 23% of you are fucking haters out there. Gilbert Burns, 50%, Colby Covington, 17%, Khamzat Chimaev, 10%. Bilal thinks I'm too much on the Khamzat train, so I got to be careful saying, oh, man, he didn't say Khamzat Chimaev again. But you notice that isn't the name on the tip of his tongue, and I understand why. I think Colby Covington is a fight that makes a lot of sense, and that has been the guy that Bilal has wanted to fight for a long time. You know, I do think those four are going to handle business. I think it's going to be Covington, Chimaev, Burns, and Muhammad, and I think there are going to be two fights out of that mix. What do you think they're going to do with Bilal Muhammad, and how would you like to see all that mess, for lack of a better way to put it, sorted out?
I think for Bilal, I think he matches up better against Covington, in my opinion.
Yep.
I think that's a better fight for him, and obviously, you know, he would like to fight him as well. I think Gilbert didn't lose a damn thing after that Khamzat Chimaev fight, and I think he deserves a guy like a Bilal. Why not? I think it's a tougher fight for Bilal. I think, you know, the way that Gilbert is fighting and the confidence that I'm sure he got after that Khamzat fight.
Yeah.
I think that would be a fantastic fight. Don't know exactly which way it would go. Might give a slight edge to Burns right now. Yeah, I think Khamzat and Colby are probably going to go, you know, go next. And again, just an awesome fight. Not so much for Colby style wise, but I think that's what the UFC wants. And typically what the UFC wants, the UFC gets.
Dana White spoke publicly about a possible return to ABC maybe this summer. And I think they're going to get a welterweight main event. And I think it's going to come out of this foursome. You know, I think Chimaev Covington is the dream. You know, there's a lot of shine that comes with a Covington fight. I do believe that Gilbert Burns is a tricky matchup for anybody, for Bilal Muhammad for sure. But I think that fight makes a lot of sense. You know, if I'm Bilal and I'm Gilbert, I don't know if you think a 5-round fight favors one or the other. I think maybe, I'm not even going to say, right, because I don't want to offend anybody. But I'd be fighting for a co-main event on pay-per-view if I'm those guys, as opposed to a 5-round main event. I mean, do you think a 5-round style in a potential Muhammad Burns situation favors one guy or the other?
I think it might favor Bilal. You know, I think he struggled a little bit. But again, I know he was dealing with a lot of stuff leading into this fight. Yeah, I mean, this was a brutal fight, for Bilal. I mean, 5 hard rounds, but I think he's going to gain a lot from this whole experience. And as of right now, as far as a 5-rounder, yeah, then maybe I would sway things over Bilal's way.
I just got a text from my buddy. It said, when are we done with the UFC in silent arenas? You know, I'm with it, man. I'm with you. RIP UFC Apex. Let's move on. all right. So, you know, there's some people who don't think I know much about fighting, and I would contend to those people, you probably know more about fighting than me. I probably know more about television formatics than you. It is what it is, right? I am certainly passionate about fighting. I've called a lot of high-level fights dating to 2009. But somebody replied to a tweet that I wrote about Bilal Muhammad, and so I, you know, one thing I wrote, I would just like to see him add a signature choke to broaden his overall threat, but he's a real problem, and I said some very nice things on the front end of that. Someone wrote to me, Kenny, John, I think it's an American wrestling thing. Usman, Colby, and Bilal all favor control over the submission threat. And I reached out to DC today. I hope I didn't wake him, but I have yet to get a reply. So, you know, you weren't some amazing double leg guy necessarily, but certainly when you got somebody's back, you're laughing, right? I don't necessarily know what I'm talking about, but when you got somebody's back, the fight was over. The fight was over, period. You know, Kenny was stronger than you would expect, I'm sure. Daniel Cormier, too. I know you guys in studio would talk a lot about chokes and little nuances when it came to the submission game. And he was able to put a lot of guys away. Now, he was obviously very strong, but DC had chokes for days. And I guess I would just bring this back up. I talk about it with Curtis Blaydes. You know, it seemed like whenever Bilal would get too offensive and get to Vicente Luque's back, that Vicente was able to get back to his feet. Am I on to anything here, or is it just that these guys, Colby included, you know, seem to lean more towards control than trying to get a guy out of there? I know it's a loaded question on an Easter Sunday.
Well, I would say this, you know, do they favor control or are they better at control? Do they favor control or are they just not good at submissions? You know, it's not like I have really good submissions, but I just want to control them. I don't want to submit them. I prefer just controlling them. I want to extend the fight for as long as possible and give them as many chances as possible for them to hit me. I think that's the smart approach. No, listen, that's what they do. That's what they're good at. So that's what they're going to do. So I think absolutely Bilal and Usman and those guys would definitely gain from being sharper with their submissions. Every chance you allow someone to get to their feet, that is a chance for you to get knocked out. So I think that there's certain people out there, right? And we've all seen them, whether it's the Tony Fergusons or the Justin Gaethjes or, you know, those zombies that keep coming forward that have iron chins. They don't understand pain. They don't understand doubt. They don't understand getting hurt to the chin. You need to have science and physics get involved where it doesn't matter how badly they want to fight.
Right.
You choke off the blood of their brain. They go to sleep. Game over. Sorry. Right. Thanks for coming.
Right. Well, and like with all due respect to my man, Ken Flo, you know, I'm the president of Team Florian, but like, why is Ken Flo still in the record books in terms of these all-time submissions, right? You would think eventually, right, Kenny, like that eventually guys would start to pass you, whether it be because of longevity, but it's not happening. You know what I mean? It's still Nate Diaz and Kenny Florian every time you show a fucking rear naked choke record book. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't happen. You know, we're going to talk to Claudio Puyes later today, I believe, UFC lightweight, fighting Clay Guida in the co-main event this weekend. I think he's the only fighter in UFC history with two knee bars. Does he just have the greatest knee bar of all time, or do people not know how to execute knee bars? I don't fucking know. You know, right. I'm not going to put on the gi to find out either, you know, but I don't know, man. I wonder if you had some of these guys as students, you know, am I being too simple when it comes really trying to master, you know, the figure four body lock and a rear naked choke and getting under the neck and switching hands and all that bullshit. Right. I mean, Cody Donovan obviously has worked hard with Curtis, you know, I know it's more fun to box, you know, but I don't know. I just think that for a Muhammad or a Covington, you know, to add that wrinkle to their game. I mean, you know, Gilbert has it, but he wants to knock you out. I mean, we're one of those guys to really add that to their game. And maybe it's simplistic, but I think because there's a lot of criticism for Bilal today and it drives me nuts. But, you know, certainly if he finishes him with a body kick, you know, he's not Giga Chikadze, but if he finishes him with a body kick or he chokes him out, the whole narrative is different. But because it goes the different distance, people have, you know, grounds on which to complain.
Yeah, listen, people are going to complain either way. And listen, no matter what level you're at, fighting is a work in progress constantly. There is not one guy in mixed martial arts who is perfect at everything. That you're always going to have your strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, it's something that Bilal, I'm sure, is working on and will work on. And a lot of times it's this. It's, I don't know the position so well from the back. I don't know how to control so well. I'd rather stay on top or, you know, kind of ditch the position and go to something else as opposed to maybe get it half-ass and then they get out and get on top. And now you just lost your opportunity. So I think it really comes down to really not understanding the position as well as you can. And, you know, I think there's some great guys at taking the back, obviously. Damian Maia is another guy, of course. And, you know, I think it's either ignored or maybe they're not just putting in the work in that aspect as much as they should. But for a guy like Bilal, the way that he sets up his takedowns, I think that might be the next evolution for him is, you know, looking to take that back, control it, and then look for ways to finish from that position. And that will add yet another dangerous wrinkle in his game.
Kenflo kind of agrees with me, folks. I don't know what else to tell you on a Sunday morning, but no, I think it's interesting. I think it would be interesting for Bilal to comment on that. And I will also say that we had asked Bilal in the past about leg kicks. And he really thought it was a mental and physical toughness thing. Certainly, if the nerve gets compromised, however temporarily, it can affect things. But obviously, he had to deal with that. Luque was 24 of 26 to the legs, and Muhammad was able to fight right through that. So congratulations, Bilal. Remember the name Muhammad. He has a video podcast on this channel with my twin brother, Jason. Thursday night, remember the show, 10 current or former UFC champions have been on that program. Kayla Harrison also has been on that program. What a peach she is. we congratulate Bilal, and I do think it might be Gilbert Durinho Burns next, which puts me in an interesting spot because, you know, feel like I'm kind of on both of their teams in some respect, just given where I work out. Won't say I train, but where I work out at the Institute of Human Performance, where Gilbert does. And then obviously we align with Bilal on this channel. So very exciting things. Very exciting things. And Aljamain Sterling, another guy, you know, he could take your back and has good chokes. And it doesn't mean that the choke can't be defended, right? Piotr Jan defended well. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I just find myself thinking about this a lot, you know? Somebody knock Kenflo out of the record books already. It's fucking 2022. all right. Anything else for me on this fight card? Did you see Andre Fialho over Miguel Baeza, Caramel Thunder? This Portuguese fighter is very interesting. I think he's the only Portugal-born fighter on the roster right now. And he does happen to do his strength and conditioning there at the Institute of Human Performance, which is neither here nor there. Shout out to JC and Rio Santana. Did you see that fight between Fialho and Baeza, man? Fucking unreal.
I did. You know, Baeza, you know, he's a guy with so much potential and he gets a lot of these tough fights, man. And he was certainly in one here against Fialho, and A lot of people have been talking about Fialho for a long time. This guy hits very hard. He's consistent. He's got a chin from hell as well. And heavy hands, ended up getting it done in a big win. Because I early on when I saw Baeza fight, I thought he was a very interesting prospect who could do some big things in this sport.
Yeah.
But Fialho, man, too tough, too heavy handed.
Yeah, he's got a lot of experience. And Fialho, another one of these guys who's sort of married to the game. You know, oftentimes I get asked about betting advice over text message or otherwise for these fights. And contractually, I'm really not even supposed to respond to those inquiries, you know. Right. But I have said publicly, you know, betting on the cardio guy and betting on guys who you know are married to the game 24/7, 365, I don't think is ever a bad thing. And I'm not going to sit here on a Sunday morning and suggest that, you know, Vicente Luque lost this fight because his daughter and his one-year-old were with him, you know. But, you know, he was on our channel. We interviewed him on the show before he went back to Brasilia. He's dealing with a newborn, everything. You know, there's just a lot of different things. And juxtaposed against a guy in Bilal who, even during Ramadan, is just, he's married to Instagram, Bilal, but he's also married to the fight game, you know?
Yeah, you know, it definitely plays a part. You know, I'm real lucky that I didn't have a family when I was fighting, you know. Being a professional athlete in a lot of different forms, I think especially when it comes to the fight game, there's a certain level of selfishness that you must have for better or worse. And that could be trouble. But I think the other thing for Luque, just on a technical level, is his footwork. You know where he's going to be. You know, he just kind of plods forward. It doesn't mean it's easy to deal with because he is coming forward and he's tough as hell and he's got a chin from hell. But knowing that the guy in front of you is predictable and you know where he's going to be based on how he's moving is not a good thing. And I think that's why Bilal was getting some great timing on those takedowns, why he was landing some shots off of his lateral movement. So I'd like to see a little bit more feinting and a little bit more trickery, I think, with his footwork. He's mixing up his strikes well, but I think he became a little bit too predictable in how he approaches it. That kind of plodding Muay Thai style stance and footwork can be good on a striking basis, but for MMA, I think you need to be a little bit sneakier with it. Mm.
One score, I think, was initially announced 49-47, but as I look at it today, 49-46 times two. Dissenting judge had it 48-47, and Bilal Muhammad was the underdog here. He'll be the underdog against Gilbert Burns. He'll be the underdog against Khamzat Chimaev and Colby Covington for sure. But, you know, I just find it interesting that if, you know, the body kick is 1 millimeter in a different spot and it finishes Luque, imagine the narrative today. Oh, shit, man. Fucking right. Bilal's finishing dudes with a body kick, you know. And that might even be a false narrative in terms of what to expect in the future. But I love Luque. I love his coaches. That's the other side of this. I know you don't like when I say it, but this is absolutely a 2-year championship setback for him, and going to be hard for him to work his way to a title fight, just given all the depth at 170 pounds. But we congratulate Bilal Muhammad, and you know, to my brother and to Bilal and to Cody Merrow, the executive producer and director of Remember the Show, you know, puff your fucking chest out today if you want, you know, seriously, because a lot of hard work has gone into that. It's not like that show is printing money necessarily right now. And, you know, just a lot of hard work, good people. And they're all Team Muhammad, and it's just very exciting stuff. And we're very happy for a really good dude, Bilal. All right, that's going to do it. We'll have more, of course, coming up with Ray Longo, who has a lot to say as the celebration for UFC Bantamweight champion Aljamain Sterling continues. Aljo, 176 pounds right now as of this tape in Ken Flo. I told him, I said, get up to 180. Yeah, he's 176.4.
Oh, my God.
I said, get up to 180 first.
That's insane.
And then you can turn and burn. And he wrote back, he's like, everything hurts, though. You know, it's like, you know, you feel... you know, fucking nutty buddies starting to like push on, you know, your ribcage. Yeah. All right. Well, Ray Longo has answered the bell on this Easter Sunday. Let us get to the Ray Longo Minute.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Is that an Anik and Florian Podcast t-shirt that you're wearing? That is outstanding. Keep them coming.
Look at that.
Come on, look at that. I represent.
Matching. Ray
I'm like
I
you guys,
matching.
Man. I tell you, Was at the CFFC this weekend. Big shout out to Rob Hadak and Arius, the matchmaker. Took care of, really treated me like gold, treated Aljo great. And my point is with that, is that so many people coming up with the Ray Longo t-shirts on. I don't know. Kenny, it's embarrassing.
I love it.
Because the guy came. I took a picture with a guy with my shirt, and then I asked him for $5 so I could buy it. That's freaking horrible. No. Actually,
we gotta keep embarrassing Ray out there. So if you can get a shirt, go up to Ray, please, with his face.
These
on
guys
shirt.
Think they're making me happy when they come up to me with the shirt on. I'm miserable.
Yeah. I can't wait to meet your daughters one day. I'm like, what do you think about your old man on all these t-shirts? AnnickFlorianPodcast.com. Cody will give us a promo code here in the next 60 seconds. But now that we cleared up that audio, it's great to see you. We appreciate you carving out a few minutes for us on Easter Sunday. We have special things planned today. Special. We're actually going to go back and watch the first 10 minutes of Piotr Jan and Aljamain Sterling. We'll watch the first 5 minutes because obviously people thought round one was close. And then we're going to watch round two again to see whether or not we all believe it was a 10-8. Obviously, you won't get video here because we don't have the rights, but we will sort of do running commentary and talk about it. But before we do that...
Why don't we have the rights? I thought we were big shots in the UFC.
Maybe you can talk to your buddy Matt Serra and see if he can pull some strings. I don't wield a lot of power. But I will say, Bilal Muhammad really performed in the main event against Vicente Luque. I know you're happy for Bilal. What do you have for us on the main event before we get to the matter at hand?
Look, man, he came up with a great game plan. The movement was fine. I know a lot of people don't like movement. I'm a big fan of it. But, right. You know.
Yeah.
Sure, you know, whatever. But he had a great game plan. He used his movement when he had to do what he had to do. He, you know, with beautiful timing on the takedowns. Even his striking, I think with the movement offset Luque just enough to get his hands going. Just a very smart fight. Very smart fight.
Did you see what Aljo weighed this morning or did you not see that yet?
I didn't see that yet.
All right. I'll say over under 173 pounds. You think he's over or under 173 right now?
Over or under 173. Let me hold on. I'm saying he's under.
Over 176.4.
Oh man!
And that's before Easter dinner. So
he's not 176.
Hey, you're on Instagram, not quite as much as Bilal, but you're on it enough to know. Go check it out.
Wow!
MMA or whatever it is.
That's pretty big.
He's big.
Look at this guy. Sunsplash Ray Longo on a fucking Easter Sunday at the gym. You know, pupils walking in, just gives them the look. You know.
What do you want me to do? Ignore him? Ignore him like a cocksucker? No, I got to acknowledge everybody.
We need a nickname for Longo at Anacolian Pod. If Saif Saud wasn't the general, I think that would make a lot of sense. But how about Longo winning a UFC championship undisputed in his 40s, 50s, and 60s? I mean, do we have a Hall of Fame trophy for that?
That, I will tell you, will never be topped. Yeah. There's a lot of guys won't even make it to their 60s. But,
well, I don't know that
that's a feat in itself. That's never happened.
Does anyone have three homegrown, home state, undisputed UFC champions?
Totally impossible.
And if they do, they won't have as much hair as Ray Longo.
That's right.
They definitely
that's right.
Won't.
So, I'm going to get him on something. It doesn't matter what it is. I don't care if it comes down to hair, then that's what we're doing. Because obviously, after a week, after performing the hat trick finally,
right,
I just, you know, the fans let me know I just still suck at everything I do, you know, so it's all good.
Right.
It's all coming. I'm sure it's all coming from a good space, but man, imagine that though, really. You know, Kenny, there's always that guy gets to the Olympics, he wins the silver medal, and some douchebag on the corner goes, "What, you didn't get the gold medal?" Like,
exactly.
You know, like they don't even see, like, just to get to the Olympics is a huge thing.
Yeah,
to have guys fighting for the championship, win or lose, is not an easy thing to do, right? But, you know, whatever. It is what it is. I love it. I actually embrace it. I love it. We laugh about it at the gym, so it provides a lot of entertainment. But the only thing that matters is I'm happy. That's it.
Kempo,
what do we got, John?
Up on that podium, that's all I'm saying. That jiu-jitsu competition, that'd be an angry Kempo. You don't end up on that fucking podium. Yeah. I'm just saying, Kempo ain't looking for fourth place, I'll tell you that. All right, we have a lot to get to today. By the way, shout out to Dracar Close, right, Kempo? In terms of, like, not wanting to spend extra time in the octagon, I know he was a massive betting favorite, but, like, fighting like I got to get out of here. Like I'm not trying to, you know, take any risk against dude who's like plus 550 against me, you know? So, all right. Unless you have anything else, Ray, I would like to get to round one, UFC 273, Bantamweight Championship, Piotr Jan versus Aljamain Sterling.
Let's do it.
All right.
Yeah, let's do it.
So basically we're all going to watch this back and sort of give our two cents as it expires. I know I did say, Ray, that when I was watching the fight live, and hopefully this video will start to fire, because if it doesn't, this will defeat the whole point. But when I was watching it live, there it goes, I felt like Jan won the first round. But then I looked to my left at the numbers and there was like, oh, there's no way he won the round based upon the numbers. Right. Okay. And I also have other things going on. So my scorecard really matters the least of the three of us here. But what were your thoughts on round one, I guess, before watching it back as the action starts?
No, I thought he controlled it with his footwork. He fought when he, you know, he fought on his terms, not on Jan's terms. And that was it. He landed a beautiful elbow, which I thought was the most telling blow in the whole first round. And his ribs were already starting to get red from the body kick on the liver side.
Ken, I'm not going to do play-by-play. Kenny pushed out a tweet that was repurposed.
There's a little late kick, but at least he's doing something. He's losing his footwork. He looks beautiful.
That's the third kick he's thrown. Jan hasn't thrown anything so far.
Hasn't done a goddamn thing yet, right? So, look, he's just getting a read. He's going side to side. He's pot-shotting him a little bit. Larry, again, you know. And, again, he's not running. He's not running away. He's using his footwork. Look at that. Takedown attempt. Get stuff. Big swing and a miss. Big swing, a big kick, and a miss.
I'm going to
wait. Okay, so as of now, first minute down, who's winning?
Yeah, Aljo.
Who's winning, John?
Aljo for sure, easy.
Easy. Still moving, yeah, he's controlling that lead hand beautifully, side to side. There was a kick that's blocked. Another kick.
Jan has yet to throw any strike.
Hasn't do anything. Yeah. And he's backing up. Every time Aljo throws, he gets the hell out of there. So who's controlling what? There's a nice body kick. There's a nice right hand.
Well, generous giving him a nice right hand there.
But whatever. It's something, John. What is Frankenstein doing?
I'm just ingesting.
This bonus commentary brought to you by crypto.com, the number one.
Please, no, Cody. The one time
there's a swing and a miss.
I love you, though.
There's a body kick and a swing and a miss. He made a miss. And there's a beautiful body kick. All right, we're 2 minutes down. Who's winning, John? I want to hear from you.
Jan still hasn't landed a shot.
John, who's winning so far?
A great start through 2 minutes.
Okay. We're 2 minutes in.
I'll read Ken Flo's tweet that I was referencing when we're done watching round one. So under 3 minutes.
Yeah, look at his side to side.
Lateral. We fucking worked on that. That lateral movement, right? You guys worked on that. He's moving beautifully. Piotr Jan stalking his prey out of the south.
Nice little kick there
from Jan.
That kick might have landed. Nice.
So I think, you know, the commentary
front
a little
kick,
bit,
nice.
John. The commentary at this point, you know, when it started, it seemed to kind of focus on Jan and how he was pursuing and looking for a big shot to try to take Aljo out. And it was like, you know, it seemed like the narrative maybe from Joe and DC was that, you know, Jan was pursuing, he was looking for a big shot. And it was kind of, there was no, I thought, talk about Aljo landing these shots in the early
look at
couple
that.
Minutes.
Nice. There's a leg kick. All right. 3 minutes down. I mean, so far it's very clear. He punched him, I think, in his lat muscle.
Right. Nothing new there. I guess that's fair, and it was felt.
No, when you aim for the head and you hit the arm.
And again,
that's
if
good.
I listen
nice
back
nice
to
check.
Any round, that's always a possibility, Kenflo, right? That the focus is too much on one athlete and not on the other.
It happens. Yeah.
Swing and a miss, a big swing and a miss again. Oh, my God.
But I would own that every day of the week. Like, I'm totally okay with that. There's no redos, you know?
Oh, a little right hook over the top, nothing special.
I thought that was
a couple of pot shot jabbing just to keep him occupied. He misses again.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, Aljo is clearly busier at this point.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you got to be a fucking fool to score this round for Jan. I'll be honest with you. Now, we're 4 minutes in, and the guy's done nothing. Did he get hit with the elbow yet?
So 4 minutes down, 1 minute to go in the round. I do believe Sterling's ahead in the round, and Let's see how this final minute plays out. Aljo circling on the outside.
There's a couple
Jan
of
doubles up on the left hand, hard to see if it landed. Aljo to the body.
Oh!
There's the elbow.
Oh, what an elbow!
That was awesome.
Holy shit. I can't believe
it. I think I missed that the first
time. And then Jan fires
a kick. Kenny Adams is beautiful like, elbow that pushed him back.
But Jan counters with a kick. You don't say anything. Like, I don't want to argue, but.
Wait, Charlie Campbell, come here for a second. Just here. Say hi to everybody. Charlie Campbell just crushed it at the CFFC. Just wanted to get a quick shout out.
What's up, Charlie Campbell?
Congrats, Charlie.
Man.
Little cameo. That's what you get. That's when you get when I do the podcast at the gym. Cameo appearance from the big guns.
That's good.
Ray wanted on a single. They exchanged some right hands or left hands from Jan.
Round over.
Ray wanted
John,
to focus
John, give us
Charlie
your,
Campbell.
Yeah, John, give us your comment.
Jan had moments late in the round. No, I think Aljo won that round 10-9. Ken Flo tweeted, go back and watch round one. Watch for landed strikes, effective techniques, etc. Not a controversial decision. Walking forward and not throwing slash landing anything doesn't win you a round. 1-2-3 for Aljo, 4-5 for Jan. All right.
Beautiful.
So, yes, I will say, now having watched it back, well, again, yeah, I mean, I don't think it was as easy as you guys do, but yes, 10-9 Sterling.
But, John, you got to remember, me and Kenny have a very experienced eye. You got to admit.
No. Hey, okay. And if you listen to the opening segment of our show, I got people who bang on my fight IQ all the time. Join the party. I don't care. I really don't. You know,
you don't care.
I'm confident enough in what I bring to the table and what I have seen over, you know, 15 years of watching MMA that I sleep well at night.
We know what you bring to the table.
But I also don't think you acknowledged any strike that Jan landed there in round one.
Oh, no.
So is round two.
No, he hit him in the armpit. I saw that strike.
So now is round two. And, you know, we'll bail on this probably, Cody, at some point when Aljo has the back. But I think this is a 10-8, Kenny. And I didn't necessarily think that at the time, even though I did wonder aloud on the broadcast, I did mention it. Mm-hmm. But based upon my interpretation of the way you're supposed to be scoring rounds these days and the way we're trying to affect change with our broken scoring system, you know, even if Aljamain wasn't threatening or having submission attempts pile up, having the back for that long and preventing Jan from being able to get out of that position, to me, I think you got to go 10-8. Otherwise, our scoring system is just fucked forever.
John, I think you're spot on for a couple reasons. First of all, when you take someone's back with the body triangle, I equate it to someone sitting up against the cage, covering up and eating shots.
Exactly.
Or not for whatever that amount of time that he had the back, right? So 3 minutes. If you're just covering up for 3 minutes and you're in the fetal position up against the cage, that's a 10-8. Like, you're not doing anything offensively. You're just defending. He went right into the mount.
Yeah.
Right now Aljo's
look
in the mount
beautiful
here.
Beautiful technique.
And he
beautiful.
Takes the back, and there's nothing offensive that Jan can possibly do from here. There's nothing. Not to mention, I think what really sealed the deal is when Aljo got him belly down and landed some really
beautiful.
Hard shots from that position.
Nobody
that
saw those, Kenny. Nobody
like,
saw those.
Yeah, and it's crazy. That's like, you know, that's the cherry on top for me as far as a 10-8. But like when you're in the body triangle, right? At whether, you know, and what we've been in here now since 3 minutes and 40 seconds or something like that. That is a lot of time to be in that highly, highly defensive position. There's nothing offensively that Jan was doing or capable of doing from this position. This is as dominant a position as you can get in grappling. This was a 10-8 for sure.
Listen, hey, listen. Does Jan want to be there, John? Does he want to be
there? No.
Why can't he get out? He's a world champion, right? Why can't he get out?
I just find it interesting that you're
he has no answer.
Coming at me as if I am like the Jan.
No. Hold on a second. Well, you're the only guy that, when I walked away to answer the door, said you scored the round for Jan. So why? Who am I going at? Kenny? He agrees with me.
Well, but having watched it back again, I didn't think it was. We could disagree until we're blue in the face. We're moving on to round two right now, and when you say like nobody saw that, you know, I think plenty of people saw that. What about the judges? I mean, none of them had a 10-8 in round two. Is that correct?
I'm trying to be facetious, though. I'm not literally, you know, whatever. But the point of this is that Jan has no answer for the body triangle.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly.
Period.
And now we're coming up on 2 minutes in this position. And, you know, again, those three words, dominance, duration, and damage. And if you want to argue there isn't damage being done, I would challenge you on that, because obviously he's sapping his tank to whatever degree. But there's
100%,
certainly dominance
100%.
And duration. For a long ass time.
Look at that. What about those shots? What, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Now he's going for the choke. He did a good job at protecting his neck. I'll give him that. But he couldn't do anything. He got rendered helpless in this round. Period.
And here for me, these
what's
are
this?
Hard shots. He's got him belly down. These are
this?
Very hard shots.
Listen, John, if this is what it comes down to, depending on who you like is gonna be how you're gonna go towards this fight, period. You know, they're in trouble now. They gave the first round to Aljo, and there's a potential 10-8. It's going to make it hard for Jan to even win the fight after that. So if you don't think, I swear to God, I know it's human nature. It's just human nature. This is a 10-8 round for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, the guy can't do anything. What's this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you think Jan's happy when he looks back at this?
No, I know. So now it's been north of 3 minutes, total domination. I mean, this has got to be clear as day 10-8, and we are going to have scoring expert Sean Sheehan on the program next week, and I will certainly challenge him on this, among other things. You know, I think this is a 48-46 fight now, as far as I'm concerned. Is that my math right? 39 or whatever it is. Yeah, I mean, 10-9 Aljo in round one for me upon further review, and then this is a clear as day, 10-8 in round two. Clear as day.
Listen, let me say something. Everybody... this is what I recommend. Go listen to Brendan Schaub. Go to his podcast, not the Fight Companion, the one he did. He knocks it out of the park. He knocks the cover off the ball. He's dead on with everything he says. Dead on.
Thank you,
period.
Cody. Some might suggest a 10-8. All right. So, see, there you go, right? Thank you, Cody. See, Cody always support me. All right. There it is.
What are you going to do? I got a little excited. What are you going
to
do?
No, it's great. So, yeah, I mean, I really feel like in order to manipulate or better work with our 10-9 must scoring system, you got to be more liberal with the 10-8s. And if that is not a 10-8 round, then I really don't know what we're doing out here. So that's got to feel pretty good to watch it back. Yeah, no, it's all love, man. It's all love. You know,
no, John, it felt good. John, it felt great when I was there, and it feels better even when I'm home. I mean,
but I guess for
you
me,
know,
like
again,
it
would have been a tragedy to me if they scored that first round for Jan and he lost that fight. I would have been, I would have lost my shit for sure. I mean, I thought it was an easy 1-2-3 to score 10-8. In the second round, you know, it's just it is what it is, man. I don't know. It is what it
I
is.
Mean, look,
they,
I don't
they,
have a
they don't like
interest.
Aljo. Nobody
but
likes it.
But I don't have a rooting interest in the fight, okay? But anyone who watches this show would probably say, despite that I'm close with Jan's manager and increasingly close with Piotr himself, that, oh, Anakin Longo are buddies. Of course he's rooting for fucking Aljamain Sterling. Yeah. But I'm just telling you, like, if I was a judge, right? On that night watching from my angle, I probably would have gotten that round wrong. And if you looked at my scorecards historically, you would have been like, yeah, I mean, that was a bad card from John Anik having 10-9 Jan in round one.
No,
that would
I
have
think
been a bad
you,
card. You know?
I think if you were sitting by yourself, you're going to get that round right.
Fair.
That's
and
what I think.
To Ken Flo's point, maybe I need to go back, and I was drinking the Jan Kool-Aid too much in
but
round one.
I didn't hear, just to be clear, I didn't hear that from you necessarily, but just that the narrative to start was kind of, you know, talking about Jan pursuing the fight and kind of walking forward. But
yeah.
But pursuing, yeah, really, but doing.
But he wasn't doing it.
Basically nothing, man.
Yeah,
I mean, again, listen to Brendan Schaub. I think he knocked the cover off the ball with his thing.
Okay,
and I don't think he's got a dog in the fight. You know what I mean? I'm telling you, everybody who said Aljo was faking and that he lost in the first fight, what do they get? They have to double down. They can throw him a little shine, but then they got to go back. You know, look, he took a lot of shit from people making fun of him. You know, he got kneed in the head. It's not even on him. But for some reason, everything was shifted towards him. It's just, It's rotten, man. I mean, let me tell you something. If anybody could talk about mindset, it's Aljamain Sterling.
Because I agree.
What he had to go through for that year. And I'll tell you, even more importantly to me, how he bounced back after the Marlon Moraes fight. This kid, he's got something. I mean, you gotta give it up to him. He bounced back from a brutal knockout from Marlon Moraes. And look, Marlon's retired now. He's the champion. He stayed the course. He believed in himself, and he stayed the course. And then he had to redo it again for 13 months listening to all this fucking bullshit out there that the guy's getting the Academy Award for taking a knee to the head. Yeah, he should get the Academy Award for not going totally unconscious. That's what you should give him the award for.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
No, and it's hard. And one thing Ray and I talked about off the air was when you lose rounds 4 and 5, right? That's not ideal. And sometimes it paints a different picture as to the totality of the fight. And people think because Jan won rounds 4 and 5, that somehow he won the fight, but he did not. And it's neither here nor there. You know, one thing that I did call Ray about was sort of to echo my surprise that some high profile fighters were sort of coming at Aljo in different ways. And I didn't quite understand the genesis nor the source of that venom. So I have to say, you know, full transparency, it was nice to see Robert Whittaker sort of publicly acknowledge and apologize to Aljo, I guess, you know, because I just, you know, I guess I can understand some of the ignorance that's out there for Aljamain Sterling, and I'll deal with some of it. But I guess when I'm seeing a lot of other pro fighters come, it's just like, I don't know. It seemed kind of distasteful, and I'm glad that Whittaker walked that back, I guess, you know.
Hey, look, I've always been a Whittaker fan. I don't really follow social media that much, so I get filled in a lot with the stuff. I'm glad he apologized too, but, you know, it is what it is. I think, you know, I don't really know Rob. He just seems like a nice guy. I think I've said hello to him a couple of times, but I'm glad he apologized, and I hope he's not going through something. These guys get hit in the head a lot. I'm not making this about CT, I swear to God, but I'm just saying, like, I see it even in the gym. You know, sometimes you go through a couple of mood swings. Who knows? But I think if you watch that fight, you got to be happy for Aljamain Sterling after what happened in the first fight.
Right. You know, I remember when I fought in Boston, it was against Gray Maynard. It was one of my worst performances, I felt like. And I remember after that fight, Dana White said something in regards to, you know, Kenny's a choker or something like that. And, you know, whether it's true or not, perception is reality. And he has such a powerful voice that whatever he says, people are going to repeat and believe. He said that he believed that Jan won that fight. As a coach, or maybe if you could talk about Aljo's perspective on it, you're the champion of the organization, and the guy who's running the show says he thought you lost the fight. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Dana, wait, first of all, I like Dana. He's running a business, though. I don't really I listen to him, but, you know, I think you got to remember, for those guys, it's a numbers game, right? And I don't think Aljo is the right numbers guy for them, right? They definitely, you know, they'll disagree. They don't like him for whatever reason. You know what I mean? They get behind people that fit into whatever their business model is. And as a business guy, I get that completely. So,
but if he's the champ, you should embrace him. Wouldn't you want to support the champ as opposed to downgrade the guy who's representing the number one guy in the division? You know what I mean?
But if you support the guy who, you know's numbers aren't where you want them, that might not help you in business. I think I always said, look, I'd love to watch the first round with Dana just like this and see what he has to say. There's no way the guy won the round. Right. And Dana likes action. Dana's an action guy. He likes guys banging. He's not going to, I don't know what he's looking at then. I really don't, but I don't think, I don't know what purpose it serves, but look, Dana got to where Dana is because this is what he does. He's good at what he does. And do I agree with what he said? 100% no. But everybody who watches that tape back knows that, listen, this is the way it is. They know that Aljo won that fight before the decision's announced.
Well, and I
look on Dana's face.
Well, the phraseology left something to be desired. But again, I did this podcast without having watched it back and came on and said that I thought Piotr Jan won round one.
It's all good.
But I'm saying, like, it's like Dana has an educated eye, right? And I don't care what necessarily people think about my eye, but yeah, maybe I got too caught up in, like, the forward motion, right? Okay, it's a singular round in MMA. Yes, it's a high-profile round, you know? But certainly Dana White and me were not the only ones who, upon first glancing, thought that Jan won the round, you know. But yes, you're right. Watching it back before you step on a hot microphone obviously has value, but sometimes we're not afforded that, you know.
No, you know what it's like? It's like, John, look, when you go to trial for something, right, there's certain times you got to move that trial out of the county to where people aren't going to be biased. But what's happened? There was so much bias in this fight from the first fight that I believe that this is the result of it, right? It's just, you're not going to get.
I wouldn't dismiss that.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just, this is things that could never be proven. I just think it's human nature.
Well, and I was crushed when Dana said that about Kenny back in the day, because as Joe Stevenson and Clay Guida can attest, those were huge, huge fights. And huge spots in Kenny's career, fighting on the co-main event under Couture Lesnar and just fucking ruining guys. So a choke artist, you know, choke artist, fucking choke you right out, you know. But well, Kempo, you know, had some really high-profile spots that he emerged from with flying colors. Is all.
But, you know, it's like anything else. It's like we could spin it forward, and maybe 5-10 years from now, you know, that soundbite from whoever that person is, you know, big or small, whatever, could be the narrative of that fight, even though it's not true 10 years from now. But yeah, Aljo won that fight. But if I remember correctly, Jan really won that fight. He was robbed. And you're like, that's not the way it went down. If you go and watch the fight. So again, sometimes one little narrative from an important voice will kind of last a long time and paint a picture that is just not true. So
Let me ask him, John, do you think that the brass in the UFC was happy with Bilal's win?
I probably not thrilled with the entertainment value.
It
you
is
know?
What it is. If you guys don't understand what's going on now, I can't. Yeah. There's no way that they like that fight. There's absolutely no way.
Right.
There's no way. And the kid fought a fucking brilliant, smart fight.
But
brilliant,
if Bilal finishes Vicente,
brilliant, smart fights is not what they want.
But if
they
Bilal
want
Lennox
Garcia against the Korean zombie, just swinging for the fences. Yeah. That's what fans like. They get. Yeah. It is what it is, man. Look, I like everybody. I don't really get caught up in. That's why I say, even like Robert Whittaker, he's entitled to his opinion. I like him. I'm not going to dislike him because he's talking like that. I'd love to talk to him about it and see exactly where everything's coming from. Just like with Dana, I'd love to sit there and go. I'd love for me, him, and Matt to sit down and watch that first round. That would be good TV because it would be fun. It would be fun. But I'd like to know why he scored it like that.
Yeah.
You can't just say the guy won the round. You got to come up with why he won the round.
Right. Bottom line, Raymond, you got a lot of world titles, man. You know,
that's it. But you mean, I don't know. I mean, that's all it comes down to.
You know,
it's three different decades.
You know, whatever. Hey, it is what it is. I'm having a blast. I'm still having fun. The fact that I even got emotional that second round just proves to me I'm still involved and emotionally invested in this shit, which is great for me because without that, I'm a zero. So it's a good feeling, you know, when you're doing something, you always want to be the best at what you're doing. I think I've done a great job with just even being consistent and staying the course in this field. I mean, I've been there since the beginning, you know, so I don't like to bullshit and come up with different terminologies. You know, it is what it is, man. I break it down to a street fight every time. Yeah. That's what it is to me. It's just two guys going at it. And I know psychologically what's going on, and that's why I try to just motivate these guys, you know, the best I can.
Well, you're the man. We love you. Have a great rest of your Easter Sunday. So did you listen to the show back last week to know that I mentioned my Jan scorecard when you got off the cans, or did someone alert you to that?
Not someone.
Everybody. Listen, New York. I will walk into that chair.
Listen, John, have I not said I'd never want you to agree with me because we're friends? I said that?
And I'm saying this, I know it's going to get back to you.
So people, we have fun with it. I think what you did to me when they told me, I couldn't stop laughing.
Son of a bitch. I'm just trying to have fun.
And look, you know? even this kid, Brian Petrie, man, don't ever. You could pick against my fighters. I love what this guy does. I don't want that. I've always been like that. I want you to disagree. And I these arguments, I like it. I think they're fruitful. And I think, you know, we go on and we disagree and then we just move forward, man. And me and Rubenstein had a good time. I never even got that close to him before. I always said hello to him, but now we had fun. He sent me a video of Mick Maynard giving him my money. I mean, what do you, this is good stuff, man. It really is all around. Danny was gracious in what happened. Didn't, you know, say anything. We had a lot of laughs. You asked Mick Maynard. It was a fun time, man. It really was. And, you know, win, lose, or draw. If you could look at it like that, I think you move on way better in your life. Than imagine getting up every morning and you just negativity. You're typing to somebody, you suck. And what could your day be like, John?
Ray and John, you know, I also appreciate the fact that, you know, in a world where we love to disagree and people spit venom at each other and all that stuff, I think it's rare, especially in today's environment, where someone, let's say, got something, maybe a different perspective, and they go back and they say, actually, you know what? I actually got that wrong. You're right. You know, and the fact that John was able to go back and watch that and go, wait a sec. Yeah, I actually scored that for Aljo. You were right. You were absolutely right. I think it takes way more intelligence and way more humility to go back, watch it, and go, actually, I did have it wrong and admit that. So I think that is very much appreciated, Johnny.
Hey, look, Joe, at the end of the day, whether you're a ref, a judge, the president of the company, when you got as many pelts on the wall as me, then come talk. Up until that time, baby, it's all good. It's all love, man. This is a great feeling.
Well, and I would hope there wouldn't be like hundreds of rounds where I would turn, but I'm telling you right now, over 11 years, dozens of rounds that I would see differently, I'm sure, watching it back. You know, 100%. I mean, and I think about how many times in the 350 episode history of this show have we gone back and watched fights for purposes of this exercise. Ray, we got to go. Have a great Sunday.
All right, guys. Happy Easter.
Much
again,
love.
Happy Passover to everybody out there.
My man.
I love my Minutemen. Thanks for supporting me while everybody's trying to shoot me down. It's all good, baby.
Dodge those bullets, there Ray.
Take it easy, man. Slipping and sliding, Kenny. You can't get
Longo minute every week here on the Anik and Florian podcast. All right, we need to get to the pronunciation of the week because Big Gun Brian Petrie has been waiting for a long time. We call on our producer here, Cody Merrow. And I'll just say, too, in terms of, you know, like it was brought to my attention that Big Gun Brian Petrie had some criticism about Dominic Cruz's commentary. You know, like Dominic Cruz is one of my best friends. Brian Petrie is increasingly becoming one of my dear friends. So, but sometimes you just got to tell it like it is. And Big Gun's going to join us in a minute. Hi, Cody.
Hello, how's it going? Remember the name.
Remember the name, remember the show, Bilal Muhammad. All right, we got two pronunciations of the week. So first one, this is going to be fun today, is a bantamweight who competes on the prelim portion of the card this weekend. He faces Cameron Else, nickname Mongolian Murderer. But Cody, we don't need the nickname. We need the pronunciation on the fighter's name. So what do you have for us here?
It is Aurinchi Lang. Right?
Aurinchi
Lang, right? That's how he's going to say it. When I play this,
you must have listened to the file. Let's
hear we've had this on before.
I knew it. Go ahead.
My name is Aurinchi Lang, Mongolian murderer.
Nope.
My name is Aurinchi Lang, Mongolian murderer.
Dude.
So... just a little lens into what we deal with. Aurinchi Lang, I think it is.
Andre Fialyou. I mean, gee.
Yeah, Fialyou. We go Fialyou. All right. So the second file, Kenny, we're playing because it's Brazilian Portuguese, and it's a name we come across a lot. Okay. It's Jessica Andrade, the former UFC strawweight champion, Jessica Andrade. And you will hear here. And, you know, Cody has been in relationships with Brazilian women, and so he's got his old fucking, you know, this dude's got like Rio de Janeiro regionalisms down pat now. Ken Flo is semi-fluent in Brazilian Portuguese. But the point is that whether you say Andrade or Andrade, she says it two ways on the file. Mm-hmm. So I love her, but listen to the file.
Jessica Andrade. Jessica Andrade.
Andrade, Andrade. So, Kenny, which should we go with?
Both are really correct. I mean, Andrade, I would say Andrade. It really comes down to accent too. It's like, you know, if I'm from Boston, we've talked about this before. If I'm from Boston and you're learning how to say car and I say, you got to get in the car. And they're like, well, I learned my English in Boston. So I'm going to say car. That, you know what I mean? What is the proper way? What is like the real way? It should be car. Right?
Yeah. You think you're better than me, Kenny?
You think you're better than me? Because you say car.
Falam português, huh? Muito.
So, Cody, what would you say? What would you say for Andrade, Cody?
Jessica Andrade.
All right. So right? We're alive. Yeah.
Right? Andre Fiala, yeah. Yo?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
You and Longo with the hair today, huh? I mean, pomade need not apply, huh?
I travel 3 hours to Garden City to go to the same barber, and then I don't train. Right.
That's look at that hair. It's like a massive wave. Wow,
hey, Cody, before we get to Big Gun Brian Petrie, congrats on Bilal. Just been a nice puff out your chest 10 days for you with Aljo and Bilal. You got to feel pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. I'm going to try and get my heart rate down. Like, it's already my blood pressure. But I don't know how James Krause does it. I tweeted this. I was like, I don't know how he does it week in and week out. He's literally in the corner watching his friends fight for money. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. He should just set up a cot over there at the Apex.
All right. He should. All right. Time to make some picks on the main event challenge. Our guys are hot, super hot. You guys hitting Bilal Muhammad at +155. Let's get to the picks as we call on Big Gun Brian Petrie.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Hey-o! At MMA Takes podcast. Ooh. Wearing the sunglasses in honor
sorry,
of Bilal
I'm just seeing the board so well, boys. My eyes are starting to hurt up a little bit. Let me take those off for you guys. What's up?
You are on fire, and if I could call on our outstanding intern, Will Berger, to update the standings. I lost my notes, right? I have a booklet here that says 2022 Main Event Challenge presented by DraftKings, and I lost my tally, but you guys are on fire. You hit Bilal Muhammad. You had to feel pretty good about that +155 tip.
Oh, yeah. I went 12-2 on my picks overall. Missed on my big parlay, but I hit Levitt. I hit Kyle. I'm going to butcher his name. I hit Bilal, and I hit Bilal by decision. We're up a couple unis. I'm feeling good.
You're on fire.
Yeah, we're seeing the board good here, babe.
You've been hitting it really well for 6 weeks. Then you hit my boy Dominic Cruz with a tweet about his commentary.
I did. Listen, when I sent it, my buddy's like, hey, do you think John's going to see that? I'm like, no. But no, listen, I've been following MMA enough to know it's that Dom Cruz baby. Will say, he loves it. He'll throw shots at DC, who he's sitting right next to. So I'm like, if I'm going to throw a shot at anybody, and Cruz can handle it. And I just sometimes I feel like he's a little bit robotic and a little bit non-energy. And, you know, and everyone has their different tastes. People love Dom because, listen, the guy knows everything about fighting. He can break the ins and outs. I like mine a little more, you know, add a little spice to it a little bit. So that's all I meant by it. But yeah.
No, and it's all good, baby. And the person who brought it to my attention thought the way you put it was funny. And that's why they brought it to my attention.
Right.
Everybody is entitled to their opinion. So we have UFC lightweight Claudio Puyas waiting in the wings. So we're going to have to rifle through some of these picks today.
Let's do it.
Because we kind of butchered the clock with Longo. So I want to begin with what I think is an important fight here at flyweight. Manel Kopp -140 fighting Sue Mudarji, who is +120. Kopp's won two in a row, was a backup for a championship fight in the UFC. He's number 14 in the world right now. I think he's championship material. I'm less familiar with Sue Mudarji, but he is the one with the higher ranking, number 12 in the world. Brian Petrie, who do you have here? And ultimately, will you have action on the fight?
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge Manel Kopp fan. I've been following his career since Rizin days. The guy's record is impressive. He could be 3-1 in the UFC. I mean, they threw him to the wolves with Pantoja. I thought he beat Nicolau, and then obviously he's on a 2-fight win streak now with explosive knockouts. The biggest problem with this guy was he just needs to go. He needs to go, young bull. You need to get after it because his power's there. His technique's there. Early in his career, he was afraid to get taken down. I think his takedown offense is tightened up a little bit, and his get-up game's getting pretty good. Sumajari, he's going to come in there. And listen, you know, he's a striker himself. He's on a 3-1 in the UFC. Before he came to the UFC, though, he fought a couple Uber drivers, it looks like, on his record. You know, 5-star Uber drivers, but some Uber drivers on there. And Kopp has – I mean, he's fought the world-class talent. And I think this guy's going to be fighting for 125-pound strap. I like Kopp by KO. A lot of action on that. If I'm going to have a money line, I'm going to have him KO as well. Give me Manel Kopp.
All right, Manel Kopp -140 for Brian Petrie. On the other side, Sue Mudarji's won three straight. Once a year, though, Ken Flo, once in 2019, once in 2020. Last win all the way back in January of 2021. Who do you like here, Flo?
Yeah, listen, I see it the same way. I see a lot of potential in Kopp. I also like the fact that, you know, he's taking fights to get himself, it seems, a little bit more comfortable in the UFC. And, you know, he had some killers early on, but I think he really is coming into his own. And I think this is another fight for him to look good and potentially fight for the belt in the future. And I definitely think that's possible. I like Cop here as well.
By the way, one of my buddies just like became an Uber driver just for a minute, just to see what it was like. Right. And like all these kids were like fucking banging on him, like calling him a fucking loser. He's like, this isn't great for my ego. You know, like back to back nights, everybody like, what's your deal anyway, old man? It's like, listen, kid, you fucking step out the car, put you in a little fucking rear naked choke, you know? So because I was actually entertaining, you know, driving an Uber just out of pure curiosity. And now, that kind of curbed my enthusiasm. All right. Macy Barber, Brian, is minus 190 against Montana De La Rosa, plus 160. Fight was supposed to happen last December, UFC 269. It shall be done this weekend. Which way are you going, Kit?
Two well-experienced girls, female fighters at 125. I'm surprised they haven't crossed paths already before. They seem like they fought everyone at 125. I love Barber coming out of the Contender Series. Her confidence and her belief in herself was infectious. Blew out her knee in the Roxy fight, huge favorite on the Roxy fight. And then, you know, come back off the knee surgery, lock, gets put in there with a killer Alexa Grasso. And then a really slimy decision over Marina Maverick, which I think a lot of people maybe had it the other way. Regardless of that, I think Barber is and still is the girl in this division that's going to eventually take over. She's 23 years old. Every time we see her, it could be a new fighter in there. I mean, she's learning new skills every single day. I saw her on Instagram. She appears to be in fantastic shape. And De La Rosa, she's solid everywhere. She's tough. She's durable. I think she's going to have the grappling advantage because I don't think Macy likes being on the bottom. I think Macy likes being on top, being the hammer. But we talk about this on the podcast alike. A lot, excuse me. Barbara's got that nasty prick in her. She's fucking mean in there. And for that, I like Barbara. I wish I could go with that plus money on De La Rosa. I just think Barbara's a more complete fighter. I think she's going to win by decision.
Barbara coming off a split over Miranda Maverick last July. De La Rosa knocked out Ariane Lipsky last June. That was one of her better performances. She is unranked right now, trying to take Macy Barber's number 14 at the very least. Ken Flo, how do you see it playing out?
I do think De La Rosa can pose some problems for Barber, but I like Macy Barber here as well. I don't love her ability to manage distance so well. I think she's a little bit confused as to how to enter or how to, you know, kind of get things going early in a fight. Sometimes it takes her a little bit to get things going. And I think it's just her bridging that gap towards getting into striking range that she's still a little confused about. But she is, I think she still has a lot of potential. You know, as Brian said, she's still very young. She's figuring it out. And when she does, I think she could definitely pose a lot of problems. So, but I think she's more athletic. I think she's going to be more effective on the feet than De La Rosa. De La Rosa's striking hasn't developed that much. I think that Brian's correct on the ground, that De La Rosa would probably have an advantage there if she's able to get on top. I think that would probably be the case, but I like Barbara here. I think she wins the fight on the judges' scorecards.
All right, Ken Flo likes Macy Barber by decision. That moves us to a feature bout at heavyweight. I did not look up the pronunciation of Alexander Romanov, so if it's Romanov, I apologize, but we'll go Romanov minus 510. Big price here against Tanner, the Bulldozer Bozer, who is plus 375. The Moldovan getting that 5-1 respect, Brian, maybe because he's 15-0, 4-0 in the UFC with as many finishes. On the other side, Bozer, highly touted, been a little bit up and down, has the Canadian been, coming off a knockout of Open St. Preux, and the only man to finish Bozer in his career, the late Tim Haig back in 2015. So Bozer pretty tough. What do you think he has for Romanov here, Brian?
Big boy action. I've been actually told I resemble Romanov a little bit. You know, I think I got a little more kindness in my eyes than Romanov. He's a machine. He's a killer. But we're relatively the same size. But Romanov is a machine. Slam, beat, repeat. That's that guy's motto. His stand-up's a little choppy. I think his takedowns are okay, but he's just so physically strong that he gets away with it. And then his cardio, I think, is still questionable. You go back to that Juan Esposito fight. He was fading, got hit in the nuts, and then they called it. Then we got Bozer, who's got that sweet Kentucky waterfall on top of his head. Just like a gorgeous mullet.
It really is.
And he is a complete different fighter than Romanov. He is quick, elusive, moves his feet in and out, doesn't want the fight to get the ground. And the thing with Bozer is when he's fought really good competition, minus OSP, which I think might be one of his best wins, Arlovski, gone, and Latifi, he's fallen short. And Latifi, who is a good wrestler, who's strong, he's big, took him down quite quite easily. It was a split decision. I let Tivo win that fight, but it was so close. Bozer got up pretty well, but still got taken down a lot. Romanoff, a bigger guy, wants to get you down, wants to pound you out. This guy has 3 forearm choke submissions. That's got to be a record. He shoves his big forearm in your throat and you go to sleep. That's insane. Now, the number's absurd, right? This, again, this is heavyweight. Anything can happen. And I thought I learned my lesson when Blaze burned me, because I took a Dawkus when that was a huge number.
Right.
And I don't want to make that same mistake again, but I'm going to, because I'm stupid. Give me Bozer. I think if he can withstand some of the takedowns late, he can maybe get a TKO if Romanoff just completely gasses. You're giving me a gorgeous number at plus 375. I'm taking it.
And our scoring system makes a lot of sense. Kenflo, what do you think about the feature bout at heavyweight?
I think there's no question that there is some good value on Bozer. You know, when I go back to the Latifi fight, as Brian mentioned, that's the one that kind of gets me worried about what could potentially happen. I think Romanoff has a lot of offensive firepower when he gets you on your back. You know, not only the choke, but his ground and pound, I think, is absolutely brutal. And I think Bozer, you know, could really be exposed there. Totally get that pick for Bozer. I'm going to go with Romanoff. I think his wrestling will get it done. I think things will get interesting in the third round if it gets there for Bozer, because I do think he's got the power to put Romanoff out. But let's go Romanoff.
All right, co-main event, more on that coming up. It'll be Clay Guida, minus 150, versus Claudio Puyes, who is plus 115, who's going to join us here in a few minutes. So we are not going to pick that fight and make the man wait. But we will need a main event pick, Bri, before we get you on out of here. Jessica Andrade, minus 170. Amanda Lemos, plus 150. A little backdrop for you. Lemos, 11-1. She's never lost in the weight class, right? Dropped her debut in the UFC to Leslie Smith. That was up 2 divisions at bantamweight. Now 5 straight wins. She is vaulted to number 10 in the world at 115 pounds. She faces the former champion Andrade back in the weight class. Brian Petrie, who do you have?
I know Claudio's waiting, and I appreciate it, but I'm taking him over Clay Guida, by the way. That's not a homer pick. Let's go, Claudio.
I love it.
Jessica Andrade, like, can we take a minute how badass this girl is? I mean, geez, she is a stud. 135, 125, 115. Doesn't matter. She'll fight anybody. She's usually the most exciting fight on the card, whoever she fights. The only time she disappointed me was the Valentina fight, right? She kind of froze a little bit. And I think Valentina's got that Anderson Silva prime peak mystique where sometimes they beat fighters before they get in there. That wasn't the Jessica Andrade we know. And what's crazy is Andrade, she was like, she's been around forever, former champion. She's fought for a title a few times. She's younger by 4 years to Amanda Lemos, which is, I think, a telling here. Lemos, beast in her own right, big power in her hands, likes to stay on the outside. The Angela Hill fight I thought was very interesting. You know, Angela Hill's a badass herself, brought the best out of Lemos. They both gave it all, and it was a split decision. But I keep going back to the Leslie Smith night. Yes, it was 5 years ago. Yes, it was up 2 weight classes, but that was just someone bully balling her in the clinch with some elbows, and she didn't like it. Enter Andrade, who is going to be a bully ball in there. She's built like a fire hydrant. I think she needs to mix up her striking with her whether takedowns or slams, and I think she's going to be good. The one fight I keep going back to Andrade was that the second fight with Rose, where it was a split decision, but that third round, Andrade was slowing down. She's walking through the fire, and it became close, and Rose is the top of the top. And I think that's going to be a play, a big thing here. This is 5 rounds. I don't think Andrade is stopping. She's back at 115 here, so she has to make sure her weight cut's right. I like Andrade by decision here.
I thought Andrade won that fight you're referencing against Rose Namajunas. That third round was absurd. Yeah, so 2-1 run, Kenflo, for Andrade at flyweight. Lone loss there, of course, to Valentina Shevchenko. Now back in what is ubiquitously regarded as her best division. Your thoughts on her here, about a 2-1 favorite against Lemos?
Boy, I think this is a tough one. I think Lemos is easily the better striker. I love her ability to read opponents. She has a lot of sophisticated baits and traps that she uses on the feet. You know, grappling wise, wrestling wise, I think she has some stuff to stop Andrade's takedowns, but over time, I think it's going to be extremely difficult. I think if Lemos gets it done here, I think she needs to get it done early. I think there's some value on her, though. I'm a fan. I think Andrade is always going to be a problem with her takedowns and ability to control. But Lemos isn't too shabby on the ground either. But it's either going to be a decision by Andrade or some kind of finish by Lemos. But I'll take the gamble here on Lemos. I see some value here.
Nice. Kempo feeling a little bit frisky on an Easter Sunday. If you want more from Brian Petrie at MMA Takes Podcast, BP, always great to see your shining face.
Yes.
Little something in the mail for you. Hey. You have a parting shot before we let you go?
Yes. Kenny, PFL this Wednesday, right?
Yes.
My boy Dom Magis fighting. He's an underdog right now. That's going to be another free pick for you boys right there. I like him at the underdog spot. He's about plus 120 right now. He's a great guy. Kill it, Kenny. That's it, boys. Thank you.
Thanks,
Happy
brother.
Easter.
You're the man. Happy Easter. We'll have more time next week. And obviously looking ahead to Rob Font and Chito Vera. Great stuff as always, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
I'll see you, boys.
There he is, Brian Petrie with us on the Anakin Florian podcast. And we go right back to the guest line now, just 6 days before he takes part in the co-main event of UFC Fight Night against Clay Guida. How handsome is this guy, by the way? UFC lightweight contender, Claudio El Nino Puyes. Great to see you, my man. We apologize for the wait. How's your fight week going, my man? Where are you right now? Are you still in Florida?
Yeah, what's up, John and Kenny? What's up, guys? I'm in Florida. Yes, I'm at my apartment right now. I'll be leaving on Tuesday for Vegas.
Well, it's great to see you. So how long have you been in Florida at Sanford MMA?
It's been a little over a year now, like a year and 2 months. And it's been a great time here. I enjoy living down in South Florida. It's pretty good, very different than Peru. And the training environment for me is the main thing that made me move here.
You know, Ken Flo's got a lot of Peruvian blood, so I feel like, Kenny, I should just sort of back out and let you guys do your thing. But obviously, he's got a lot of momentum in fighting your former opponent, Clay Guida, this weekend.
Yeah, Claudio, what has been the big difference in you moving to Florida? How has it changed your game, you think?
I feel like I'm finally living the life of an athlete like I should have. In Peru, it was very hard to be consistent. Oh, sorry, guys. Something popped up. Okay.
That's right.
In Peru, it was very hard to be consistent as an athlete. I had I had some injuries in the past, but also then COVID came and they closed us down. Like I was like stuck in my apartment. It's just too many distractions at the time. I saw Sanford MMA here, all the stuff that was going on here. And I was like, I need to be there. I had lived here before in Miami when I was a young kid, and so I kind of knew the place around. I just needed to move a little more north. And yeah, I came and I think it was a great move for me. Fit me well.
You're fighting Clay Guida, a guy that I fought all the way back in the day. It's amazing that he's still fighting at this point. And he's still pretty dangerous. You know, how do you break down Clay Guida as a fighter at this stage of his career?
Sorry. Yeah, I see that nice picture you got behind you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I hope I can have mine the same like that.
No.
You'll probably get his knee, but
yeah, that's right.
Whatever I can get, I'll be happy. I think it's gonna be a good fight. When they offered me, I didn't hesitate on taking the fight. I thought I was gonna get something different. Like I didn't expect to get like a Hall of Famer, so I was pretty happy. I thought maybe like someone closer to the ranking, but I don't even know where he's at right now. I don't know where I'm at right now, but I know I'm going to go in there and do my job. Like, I'm very prepared for this. I've been waiting for a good opportunity for years. For me, for the Peruvian people, the Peruvian MMA community, I feel they needed a big fight like this. Like, we all needed, like, someone to represent us, and I'm happy to be the man.
You are the man. So how long have you been fluent in English?
I don't know, like all my life, I think. Like,
yeah, so obviously you spent some time, your formative years in Miami. Perfect. But, you know, I watched your post-fight press conference this morning after your win over Chris Gritzmacher. And, you know, no interpreter needed. You know, you could barely tell English is your second language. And in terms of resonating with an audience around the world, you know, you open up a lot of opportunities for yourself because you've sort of embraced that, you know, so good on you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. I went to a school where English was basically the first language, like when I was like 6 or 7, and then I moved here when I was 14. So between those like two things, I learned pretty well. I was like speaking like fluently.
So Claudio Puyes joining us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. So in any other division, 4 straight wins, you probably have a number next to your name. but obviously at lightweight, despite the fact that it was a big 2021 for you, no ranking yet. So big win last December, obviously you prioritized a finish. You were able to get another finish. When you went back and watched that fight, I'd imagine you've done that. How did you assess your last performance in the octagon?
So I think I shut down Chris's game because he's very relentless, especially on the later rounds. I knew he was going to be hard to stop if I didn't finish him early. But I also knew he was hard to finish early as well. So it was a tough match. But I think I shut him down good. Whenever he was growing momentum, I just like clinch him up or did something to like stop him. I still think I had a couple of mistakes. I did some things wrong in the fight, which I already got it better. And I'm a better fighter now than I was a year ago. Like when I first came back on 2021, it was hard. I hadn't been almost in the cage almost in like 2 years.
Right.
It was my first training camp in Sanford outside of Peru. And I still won my fight against an undefeated fighter in Jordan Leavitt, which he won yesterday night.
Yep.
But I just feel like I'm like levels ahead today. Like I'm way better than I was 10 months ago. And
who are the primary training partners? I mean, I know the coaching staff pretty well, but who are the bodies that you're relying on down here?
I get this question asked a lot because like people know how many good training partners you have in Sanford. So it's an interesting question. Well, for this camp, I've been training a lot with Nick Lentz. He's his coach, but he's very good. He's very good. He moves very well. He mixes up the game. I've also been training a lot with Jared Gordon. He fights next weekend. He's a pretty good partner as well. They're kind of same height as Clay, and they come forward a lot, those two. So
yeah, they can mimic that game really well. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been using them a lot. I mean, I train with a lot more people, but I feel like those two were the guys I've been like thinking they could kind of push me like my opponent is going to do.
So you win that fight last December. Like, do you go back to Peru? Like, how are you navigating that part of your life? Or did you stay in Florida and just keep with it?
I didn't. I'm going after this fight.
Okay.
I'm looking very forward to it. I have some new things there that are like new sponsors, like a lot of stuff that I want to go back and do. I want to visit my family as well. I think it's like the longest I've ever been far from Peru, like the longest time in a while since I was a kid and I came to Miami. It's been a long time.
Well, that's great. Well, we wish you all the best. Before I let you go, your 26th birthday is Thursday. Is that right?
Yes.
So you're going to be cutting, not cake, you're going to be cutting weight Thursday night, right?
The worst day, like the day before weigh-ins. For me, it's like the worst day. Like on weigh-ins is good because I'm actually going to get to eat. So I'm happy. I'm looking forward to that day. But the day before weigh-ins is the worst one. And well, you know, when I accepted the fight, I knew I was like, I wanted to fight one more time being 25. But I don't mind. Like, you know, that's life. Like, I'm going to get this sick fight. I'm going to get ranked. I'm going to get a finish. And it'll be all worth it.
Well, it's amazing to see where you've come from the Ultimate Fighter Latin America to have this UFC winning streak and certainly putting Peru on the map. We wish you all the best with the showcase this weekend and shaping up as a big 2022 for Claudio Puyes. Thank you for joining us, my man. And we will see you.
Yes, of course. Are you going to be in the fight?
I am not going to be in Vegas this weekend, unfortunately. I know. I'm bummed. You know, when they call my number, I show up, but they didn't call my number this week, so.
Right, John. One question for Kenny. Like, I always wanted to know, how's your? Can you tell me a little bit about your Peruvian part?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So my dad grew up in Chiclayo, and my mom from Lima. So both my parents are from Peru, and I've been, I guess, 3-4 times over the course of my life. I haven't been able to go recently, but yeah. So,
oh wow, you both your parents, that's crazy. I didn't know
both
that.
My parents,
I thought maybe your mom or your dad. Wow, but you were born in Boston.
I was born in Boston, yeah, okay. Yeah. Nice. So, nice. Well, that's yeah, man, I've been loving what you've been doing, man, and super proud and can't wait to see you get the fight and get the win against Clay.
Thank you. I know I'm gonna represent very well. I like Clay, but it's my fight, it's my time. Like, you know, like, I'm not going to go in there to like try stuff. I'm going to go in there to win, like 100%.
Yeah. Ken Flo's like a legitimate Peruvian, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Never
he's
sure.
Legit. He's legit. He's going to get the Peru flag tattooed on his body if you win a UFC championship. So you win the UFC lightweight title, he's getting the tattoo. So
yes.
Let's go, Claudio.
Hey, real quick before I let you go, Charles Oliveira, Justin Gaethje. Obviously, the belt in your division is going to be on the line here in a couple weeks. You think Charles remains the champ, or you think Justin gets it done?
I think he remains the champ, even though Justin is a very, like, I think one of his toughest like matchups if they stay on the feet. But I think he'll eventually like get to the grappling and choke him out. He's very good today. Like he's at a very high level today.
All right, you can watch UFC lightweight Claudio Puyas live on ESPN Plus this weekend in the co-main event against Clay Guida. Appreciate your time, my man, and we will be watching live this Saturday night. Have a great fight.
Thank you, guys.
There he is, Claudio Puyas, El Nino, with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. Kenny's not going to get that tattoo, folks. I feel like I said it, so I should probably get the tattoo. Seems a little much, you know. I feel like I have to get the Brazilian flag tattoo before the Peruvian one, but I guess if Claudio Puyas wins the UFC lightweight title, we'll figure out a way to get some Peruvian tattoo.
I tell you, he's a talented kid, man. He's got heart for days, and it seems like he's very invested in the game. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do in the UFC.
And I'm being told by our great man, Cote Cruz, who helped us coordinate with Claudio Puyas, that El Nino was the early gimmick. It's now the Prince of Peru. Can you change the nickname? Paging UFC researcher Tom Gerbasi. Have him announce Cote. Effect change. Have him be announced as the Prince of Peru, Claudio Puyas. And it shouldn't be Claudio, the Prince of Peru, Puyas. Nickname on the front end. We ain't fucking around here. It's the Iron Long Paul Felder, right? The Prince of Peru, Claudio Puyas. Taking on Clay Guida this weekend. All right. Remember the show with Bilal Muhammad coming up Thursday night. The celebration is officially on for those guys. If you want the merchandise, AnakFlorianPodcast.com. Do we get a promo code from our guy Cody? Maybe we'll get one. Do we have a Mero Seconds today? Is Cody going to chime on and tell us what we missed for the fourth consecutive week, or is he ill-prepared with his lettuce going everywhere?
I'm always prepared.
My man.
Am I ill-prepared? My God.
It's time for the Mero Seconds. One more sleep merch, by the way, at millions.co, promo code ANIC2 for 10% off. KennyFlorianMartialArts.com. Bilal Muhammad is going to go buy the jiu-jitsu class. I'm just kidding. People can't take a joke, you know? Will Berger, our intern, you're the fucking man. We got to thank you before we get out of here. All right, Mero. What do we miss, my man? FAM15, AnikFlorianPodcast.com, 15% off your entire order. FAM15 is the promo code, AnakFlorianPodcast.com. Cody, what do you have?
Code Longo, too, if you're privy. It's the same discount, but
Longo, you know, just the word Longo?
Just Longo.
All right. Use FAM15, though. I mean, we don't need the metrics telling us that everybody's buying merch for fucking
right. So that PFL event that Brian Peacher brought up is on 420, so might need a reminder, everyone. So set your clocks.
Kempo going to be lit in the broadcast booth. I will be. Scotty O'Connell.
I'm sound it, but I'm going to go sober.
Ken Flo on the Snoop cast. Instead of the Snoop cast, they have the Wiz Khalifa cast, right? Because he's like Brandon Master. It'd be him and Marshawn stoned as hell. Like, that'd be awesome. I would watch that.
Wiz Khalifa's bong is unbelievable. Next level.
So the Jeremy Lil Heathen Stevens is headlining that, right? He's the headliner?
Yes.
So, John, he's facing Clay Collard. So both former UFC fighters, correct?
You know how Boston say Collard?
Collard.
Like that.
Clay Collard. Collard.
Clay Collard.
What do you think the odds Collard? Are here, kid? What do you think the odds are?
Collard and Stevens?
Yeah.
We'll go Clay Collard -150, Jeremy Stevens +120.
Collard -125.
All right, not far off.
-105. Getting some value there, I guess.
Interesting.
Cejudo back in the USADA pool. That means he's eligible to fight in October. So setting up some stuff that has yet to say who he wants to fight or what weight class, kind of all up in the air. He's training with John Jones. I don't think he's gonna go that high, but
he is not going to get the Volkanovski fight, I wouldn't believe. Sorry to the captain, Eric Albarracin, if you don't like that noise. But I don't know that he's going to jump the queue at featherweight, Ken Flo. But it's exciting to have him back, you know, as he attempts to eventually become the artist known as C4.
Dude, he's a beast, man. And again, I think he's done great things as a coach as well. So clearly, you know, a gifted athlete, that is for sure.
Yeah.
But good head on that, on those shoulders, huh?
Can flow back in the USADA pool for fun.
It never left.
Prove how fucking clean he is.
Never left. Just always ready for that next title shot.
Oh my God. Oh my goodness.
Cody, do you have anything else?
So the last thing, I'm going to have you guys guess two odds for the May 7th pay-per-view. All right. Rose versus Carla. What do you think that currently is sitting at on DraftKings Sportsbook?
Minus 320 plus 260.
No, not even close. Kenny?
No idea.
It's far closer than you think. Rose minus 170. Carla plus 150.
Wow.
Yeah. Some serious value to be had.
You can get me in trouble with predictive language like this, Cody, right? Because now I am on the record as saying that I feel like Rose should be a bigger favorite than she is against Carla. I'm just saying, do you know what Kenny Florian's record was when he made his UFC debut? Anybody? Do you know? Do you know?
I don't know.
Kenny, do you know?
I don't even know. What, 3-1?
2-1.
If I'm not mistaken.
Let's go on your Wikipedia page today to find out exactly when you fought Clay Guida to see if our man Pooey S actually went back to 09 to watch the film. But Rose Namajunas was 2-1 as a pro when she fought Carla the first time is all. But go ahead, Cody.
Crazy. Well, I'm just going to bleep it out anyway. No one's going to even know. So, Kenny, Chandler Ferguson, who do you think is – what do you think the odds are? We won't make John guess.
Chandler Ferguson, I would say –
I want to guess.
Say minus 280 for Chandler and Ferguson plus 220.
Chandler's running about a minus 400.
Oh, really? That high?
Wow.
Wow.
Plus 300 and on then the Ferguson.
He disappears like a ghost.
What about champ shit only, though? You know, fucking Tony Ferguson.
Yeah. Don't count him out.
That's a great card, UFC 274. I know you got PFL obligations. We got to get you to one of these pay-per-views, though, Kemplo. You bailed on us in Jayville, you know?
I know.
I mean, how's your son?
He's great. He's great. Good. He's going through a little growth spurt right now. He's eating everything in sight, kid.
That's good.
He's a monster.
That's good, man. That's good. Hopefully, yeah. And probably fucking smash my son. Archer Florian, incidentally, with a jiu-jitsu gym in his house. All right, we got to get on out of here. Thanks to Ray Longo, to Brian Petrie. Thank you to Claudio Puyes and to our guy Cote Cruz for helping put it together. Don't forget, remember the show with Bilal coming up this Thursday. And we are back with you next Sunday, April 24th. We will recap UFC Fight Night, Lemos versus Andrade. And, of course, look ahead to a monster bantamweight main event on April 30th between Marlon Chito Vera and Boston's Robert Font. With that, for Kemplo, I'm John. And thank you all for listening, for watching, for subscribing. Big announcement in the next few weeks. Until then, tell your friends you'll fucking later.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.